Why, hello there, and welcome back to Wrong Opinions Only with your hosts, Justin and Kayla. And this week, we're back with a movie review, Kayla, and a pretty fun topic this time, if I do say so myself.
You know what? You certainly do so say yourself, and I second that because I picked the theme, the movie theme of this week. It is going to be high school college hijinks. I almost feel like we need a two-parter to this movie review because we both actually selected high school films, which is great, but I feel like we might need to throw another, you know, college hijinks theme as well so that we can get kind of those films too.
I'm on board for that, Kayla. I love these types of movies, so watching more of these is right up my alley.
Perfect, perfect. So, as I said, it's high school hijinks, really, this theme this week. What do you think about this theme when you were, I guess, looking at movies to give me or just even in general of you watching them? Are you a fan of it?
Oh, yeah. I love kind of this category of films. I love just kind of the nostalgia factor of thinking back of all the stupid things we did in high school and college. A lot of these films are kind of centered around like one big event or one big day, which I think is a fun kind of storytelling dynamic because you're seeing how all of these people from different walks of life kind of interact and kind of combine together as a unit in the school. So it's just high school and college movies are the perfect setting because you have all these different cliques, you have all these different personalities, you have this kind of like, you know, people not liking each other. So you have this push and pull in the different types of cliques. So it just sets it up perfectly for a baseline of a movie.
When you think back on high school, and I kind of laugh because this somewhat is a shared experience, us being in high school together, of course, what do you think about looking back at that time and how you were and the dynamics there and kind of how they play out in movies? Do you feel like our high school experience was a movie in some way? Could we have a movie on what we did? And maybe won't ever admit to in some things, our own hijinks, if you will.
So I think when I was in high school, I thought, yes, like, wow, we're doing all this stuff. This is fun. You have no responsibilities. You're hanging out with all your friends and like, who gives a shit really, as long as you're like safe and making it to school the next day. Right. Looking back, you know, maybe some points, but I really enjoyed high school. We had sports, you know, I had a lot of friends and a lot of different kind of cliques within our high school, but we were a city public school in Syracuse, New York. We were not where a lot of these high school movies take place, which is the really rich kids in California or New York or Florida. Like, we are not quite that same demographic, Kayla. So it skews things. We don't have the massive $10 million mansion to go party at, you know?
I actually want to talk about this because I work with a lot of people that have kids that went to more like suburbia schools. They went to different areas where they didn't have kind of the experience we had, like say metal detectors every morning. That was
people get
like
scared when you tell them that. Yeah.
Yes, their parents pay for like their college, like they go to Europe right after. I mean, I can't relate to that whatsoever. So I do feel like that type of experience does factor into personalities because I feel like growing up in the city, going to city schools, I just have a certain attitude, a certain like whatever kind of attitude. And sometimes these parents I work with or these kids, I'm kind of like, oh my God, do you know how good you have it? Like, I just kind of look at people like, what?
Yeah, you appreciate it more because we didn't come from as much of kind of the luxury as a lot of these movies portray, you know? So kind of had to, Kayla, we are just the every person. We're the blue collars here, all right?
We definitely, yeah, that's how I picture it. I also think back to a high school and I'm like, it was so small. Like, our world was so small because there, although we thought of like what we would do afterwards, the drama of the day, and certainly we experience a lot of drama every day, felt like so huge. It felt like we wouldn't get over certain things. I mean, I remember so many times being like, how am I going to make it to Monday? Or, you know, like being in a situation where I'm like, oh my God. And it's just so funny to look back now and go like, those things that I thought were so world ending were so like, relationship, all types of stuff. You're like, oh my God, so stupid. I mean, hello, we had a blog era. We used to journal online. And I remember the gossip was like, did you read so-and-so's thing?
Like aggressive journaling. Like people would call each other out through anonymous journaling. Yes.
It wasn't the Q&As. I mean, that's so fucking funny to think about right now. Like doing that shit and being so angsty. It's so funny.
Cringy to look back. I had our friend Amy sent me a note the other day, and it was like, on this day 15 years ago, whenever we were in high school, and there was like a Facebook status update. And that was when social media was just happening, right? We're kind of the first wave of social media. So we didn't really have all these fancy phones, and internet was kind of starting as we are growing into understanding it. So nobody knew how to do anything. So you look back at this and it's so cringy. It's like people posting on Facebook, like, what are you doing today? Because the prompt used to be like, you know, what's on your mind or what are your plans for the day? And it'd be like, can't wait for dinner tonight. Or, oh, just had a cool conversation. Or like just stupid ass shit that at the point felt so important. And now you're like, that was all insignificant.
You felt so serious with the song lyric you chose. We also had the MySpace era of like, visually having to show who was important to you and like where you were in the number was so important. And if you fell off a number, you were pissed. It's so funny to think about, you know what I mean?
Yeah, that would not apply nowadays. I think everybody's a lot more sensitive now. But yeah, we used to literally rank our friends and put it for the world to see. So there you go.
Yeah, I mean, good times. I definitely think we could have had a few different movies. Some of the hijinks we all got into, definitely. But I'm really glad that some of that stuff is just dead in our photo bucket online sites we can't get into, and we can't see the evidence of some of those things that I think teens can now. So that's why we have movies to kind of reflect on, look at, and see our experiences, or maybe go, that's not my experience, but I love watching it. Let's talk about the movies we gave each other, and I think we gave a good past high school hijinks movies and a good more modern one. I'll be interested in our takes on it. So you gave me Dazed and Confused, which is available on Hulu, and I gave you Due Revenge, which is available on Netflix. Justin, why did you give me Dazed and Confused?
Yeah, so this early 90s movie, 1993, you know we kind of love that era, and I've heard so many people reference Dazed and Confused. I've seen it pop up so many times. I've seen so many kind of clips or references to it. And I personally never seen it. And I read the description. I looked at the cast, which is a loaded cast. And I was like, this fits our criteria for our movie review. I really want to watch it. It seems like something Kayla would be into because it takes place in the 70s. It's a bit of a period piece. And when you're kind of looking back on the nostalgia aspects, it is fun to see how different generations fared in the same scenarios that you were in, because middle of the 1970s is way different than when we were growing up in high school. So it's fun to kind of play those dynamics off of each other.
For sure, for sure. And sometimes when I was watching the movie, I thought, some of this I can relate to. So I gave you Due Revenge. I gave you that movie because I had gotten a lot of hype about it online. Like people were just really talking about how much they enjoyed it. And I was like, you know me, when it comes to teen movies, I'm like, I don't know. And I really, really enjoyed it. I laughed. I thought like the character work was so funny. I thought it was modern in its views, but like wasn't concerned about being offensive or being funny or like making stupid jokes. Like I just felt like it was really free in like how it was having different dynamics play out between the characters. So I just thought, here's a good modern version that I thought they did it really well, and I don't feel like I see a lot of that going on right now. So that was kind of where I was coming from. Let's go ahead and get into my film, which is Dazed and Confused. All right, so this movie came out 1993. It was directed by Richard Linklater, who also directed Boyhood, which I found to be a mind-blowing film as far as having the ability to film actors across, you know, the 10 whatever year span that movie took place. It was just so like amazing. He also wrote it. Notable stars: you have Anthony Rapp, who was the first person I saw in this film, like first person I recognized, and I was like, oh my god, Mark from Rent. So that was like an exciting thing. I didn't know he was in that. Ben Affleck is in this film. That was a total surprise to me. I had no clue he was in this film. So I go, what? Parker Posey, Matthew McConaughey, of course. I feel like most of the quotable things in this movie are indeed from Matthew McConaughey. And I think I knew every line that he said because it's so well known, even if you haven't seen the film like I hadn't.
I didn't never realize this is where these references came from. Like the, all right, all right, all right. I just thought that was him. I didn't realize it was like one of his first acting roles. He just shows up and that's one of his first lines on like camera. Pretty funny.
So great. Like I just was like, oh, I know what this one's going to be. Like I could kind of finish his line as he started to say it. Mila Jovovich is in this film. Jason London had a budget of $6.9 million. And in the box office, it made $8 million. So it was essentially a box office flop. This movie did super poorly. However, it kind of became a cult classic once it was released on the great VHSs, DVDs, and that. Like most cult classics, that's kind of where they get all the buzz and excitement is when they come out and people just catch on to them. So people weren't in the theaters to see it, but they certainly were renting it and watching it. Got a 93% on Rotten Tomatoes, very high audience score here. No real receptions and awards. Like I said, it didn't do well in the box office, but the soundtrack did go double platinum. And, you know, you don't get a lot of information so on good soundtracks for films. So I think that's great. Some fun facts. So 10% of the movie budget went to the music rights. Clearly it worked since it went double platinum. And Linklater created mixtapes for each major character and sent them to the actors, helping them to kind of decide on songs for the soundtrack. I think that's so cool. Like, I certainly, you know, when I'm writing or I'm thinking of movies, like, I hear songs and I think of, like, characters. So that makes total sense to me that you would try to, like, build a musical personality for your characters. I wish, like, more people would do that or you'd hear about that.
That's cool. Yeah, that's a real cool concept. I don't think I have the creativity or music knowledge to do that, but it totally makes conceptual sense to me.
Yes, absolutely. This is one of Quentin Tarantino's favorite movies. He called it the only movie that three different generations of college students have seen multiple times. Matthew McConaughey was a University of Texas graduate with just a film degree at this time. This was his first movie, and he landed it after a drunken chance meeting with a casting director, Don Phillips, which ended with them both getting kicked out of the bar, but he got the role. Even his audition tape is pretty famous, too. It's watched a lot, Matthew McConaughey's.
That just seems like it fits Matthew McConaughey to a T. Mm-hmm. He got the role because he got drunk with the casting director and kicked out of a bar. Yep, okay. Yes. Checks out.
And shout out to Don Phillips because he also did the casting for Fast Times at Ridgemont High. So he clearly has a really good eye at kind of unknown actors building just stars later on. So that's great. Linklater was sued by some of his real-life classmates from this movie. So he kind of built it off his own experience in high school, and he was kind of lazy in changing names. Three of the names were like directly from his classmates in high school. And so they sued him for defamation, and it was later tossed. But I just find it so funny that they saw this. I don't know if it was a money grab or what. I don't feel like anyone was too poorly shown that you'd be like, this is so rude that you have me acting this way. But oh, well, it didn't go anywhere. And Renee Zellweger pops up as an uncredited extra. It's basically when Mitch meets up with his friends. At a certain point, she walks by. I tried to pause the movie to see if I could catch her face, and she's truly a blur. It's a 2-second walk across the screen, but she was there. All right. I think I'm ready for my run through this plot line. It was very difficult to try to think of how to describe this movie because it's essentially a movie of a time period without one real central plot, or you could argue that it has many plots. But here we go. Tell me when I'm good.
All right, Kayla, 3, 2, 1, go.
This all takes place on one day, May 28th, 1976, the last day of high school at Lee High School in Texas. Seniors are hazing freshmen. Pink, the star football player, refuses to sign an anti-drug pledge. Freshmen are chased and paddled. Freshman girls are rounded up and covered in food. Mitch Kramer, as freshman, gets paddled but gets invited to cruise the seniors. Everyone's looking for a party. Mitch's friends get paddled. Then they get revenge of the main bullies, Senior Fred. Three nerds, Cynthia, Tony, and Mike, are trying to get to cool spots. Pink also hangs out with David, a guy in his 20s, socializes with high schoolers, and they hang out at a pool hall. Everyone listens to Meeks, Rozick, and Flurs. They hit mailbox baseballs and almost get shot. Eventually, all groups go to a keg party in the field, and Mike ends up in a fight with Clint. Cynthia flirts with David. Mitch gets drunk high and flirts with having a great time. He gets the last warning from his mom about going home late. The other dudes get Aerosmith tickets. How'd I do?
36 seconds, Kayla. Well done. And like you said, there's not a lot of like scene breakdown on this one.
There's really not. There's really not a thorough thread. Okay. This film. I feel like you need to be high to really enjoy this film. But I know that is funny from a titling standpoint. When I was going into this movie, I knew this, like you said, a movie that most people reference and say a lot. So I go, okay, I thought this was a stoner movie. Now, certainly weed is in this movie, but it wasn't like every character was high. That's kind of like what I thought going into it. So I was surprised that it was just like certain characters or like the theme. The plots were kind of all over. I lost a bit of like who was who in this time point, because like names are mentioned, but they're not really, again, like they're nicknames or they're just like messing with each other. So I'm like, I don't know anyone's name in this scene.
Continuity stuff where they're like in a car, but then you see one of the people that was in a car is back in another scene. So some of that was a little bit difficult to follow.
Yes. I was like, wait, who's the nerd? Cause there's so many different groups that are like eventually going to come together at one party. And sometimes they cross. You have Mitch and his kind of like nerdy eighth grade to freshman friends that are like one group, even though Mitch gets separated and basically hangs out with the older kids for the majority of the movie. You have these kind of nerdy sophomore juniors and Anthony Rapp's group that are trying to find like a party, but they got like no game anywhere trying to make friends. You have Pink, the star football player, and David, Matthew McConaughey's character, like hanging out. You just have like all the, and then you have like the bullies, right? The like senior assholes, and Fred, who's like a repeat senior, Ben Affleck's character, who he was really doing the most in this film, certainly.
He was so over the top in this, man. And when he showed up, he was just like, I'm going 100 miles an hour right off the bat.
Yes. And, you know, this movie takes place in the, you know, the mid 70s. I got to say, the music during this time, 70s music, 10 out of 10, some of the best groups, best singers, best songs. But I got to say, like 70s culture, and I think that's where this movie lost me a bit, isn't really my vibe. Like, I don't think 70s culture really interests me. 80s for sure, 90s, like, but I feel like 60s, 70s, the kind of like free thinking hippie, like, or, you know, all we're gonna do is like hit mailboxes and smoke weed because that's kind of all we got. That one's a little rough for me. So I think like because the culture wasn't really like interesting, it was a little bit of a struggle in this film, although I enjoyed a lot of the characters. Like some of the scenes were really funny. Yeah.
And one of the kind of through points is the main character, Randall, good old Pink Floyd, is contemplating whether he wants to basically sign away his rights for the football team of, I'm not going to do drugs and I'm not going to drink and I'm not going to do all this stuff. And he's like, why? I don't need to be oppressed by these guys. I'm going to do my own thing. They can't tell me what to do. And it's that time, like you said, of free thinking. He's trying to see if he really needs to go through with it, if that's what he wants to do or what he thinks he should do. So they kind of point that out a handful of times. And I think it's interesting that Randall Pink Floyd was kind of the center point of the film because he's not like a star of the film, right? But he is just connected to all these different groups in various ways. So it's an interesting way how they follow him because he's with the stoners. He's kind of friends with them. He knows the smart kids. He's taken one of the younger kids under his wing, but he's also on the football team. So he's hanging out with the douchebags. So it is kind of cool that he's the, what's the term there, fulcrum of the film, where he just is kind of like, I'm going to go here. You can follow me. You're going to see something about these guys. We're going to run into those guys later on. And it kind of all revolves around him without giving him like a crazy amount of screen time.
Yeah, I think one thing I did kind of like on the 70s is just, I think the androgynousness of the 70s, like it's funny that this movie definitely highlights like gender norms, but also everyone kind of looks like guys are wearing long hair, women are wearing all these belt buckle jeans. Like it's just funny to me that like visually and how people were styled and how they looked, it was very much like I'm not leaning one way or the other. And I feel like that's kind of centered on the 70s. Like it was very like we all kind of look the same, you know, guy, girl, whatever. So I think that stood out to me, especially like Mitch's character, because Mitch is this, I think also kind of not a main character, but you're following him, like, in the story, you're following, like, him being kind of accepted, however briefly, into this group of friends and, like, experiencing high school through them and smoking weed and drinking and committing crimes that he participates. Like, he's getting all this in one night and even before he starts high school, so... And it seems like he was a big fan when he went to bed and listened to his music. So I don't think he was like, eh, I'm good for the rest of the 4 years while I go in high school.
I think he was like just excited that they got him. I mean, not excited that he got beat with a paddle, which is aggressive. We've come a long ways in hazing since the 70s. But he got he started talking to that sophomore girl. He was making out with her at one point, I think. He's going to all these parties. He's at the Emporium. They're playing pool. He just felt like he was king of campus and he was just going to become a freshman. So I think when he goes to school or hangs out with his other buddies in the following day, he's like, eh, you guys bailed on me, so screw you. I got to do all this cool shit and now I'm in with these guys and you're not. So props to Mitch, who I don't know about you, but I don't know about the acting performance about Mitch Kramer throughout the film. It was a little weak.
I don't know. It, like, he's an awkward kid that, like, you see that he might be on the start of stardom with, like, his crazy pitch he has in that one scene. Like, you see that maybe in, like, a year or 2 years, he starts, like, transitioning to a cooler kind of guy at school. I don't know. I think, you know, like, eighth grade's such a weird time, you know, when you're getting to high school.
Point.
Like, you're so fucking awkward. You're so awkward. You're so trying to almost adapt a different persona going into high school because you're like, I'm at a different school and then maybe these are different people and I want to be a different way than I was, you know. So I kind of factored in the awkwardness of just being that age, and also none of his friends were with him, so he just kind of was like, yeah, I'll hit mailboxes, yeah, I'll, you know, drink this beer. David, the character David, Matthew McConaughey's character, we all knew a David. I mean, that's what made me laugh, you know?
Please refer to him as Wooderson. Like, that's all they refer to him as, Wooderson. When do they ever say David in the entire movie? He's Wooderson. And I could barely say it here during the podcast, but Wooderson.
You just got why I'm calling him David. we all knew that guy. I mean, how many, like, you know, the guy that already graduated high school, hadn't quite figured out what he was going to do. He had the house that you could have the house parties in. Like, he was the one kind of being a little creepy in the corner with the high schoolers. Like, we all had. So, like, I found it funny that you have this character and maybe he seemed cooler in the 70s and maybe differently. But it was kind of like, yeah, that cooler, older character. Like, oh, we're going to go to so-and-so's house and he can get beer and, you know, all that. So that's across any generation, I guess.
Yeah, and some of those cringeworthy lines, like that's the thing I really like about high school girls is I keep getting older and they keep staying the same age. And you're like, oof, this is a little, like, those scenes are rough to watch now, but obviously they're setting this in the 70s for a reason. And that was, I guess, more acceptable, at least in movie-wise in the 70s. So just so funny to see McConaughey playing that guy, because every time he was on screen he was pretty electric in my opinion, but it's like, yeah, you don't want to root for this guy, but he's like fun to watch, you know.
Yeah, I mean, I think that tells in the movie making, since he was only supposed to be in like a couple scenes and ended up being in so many scenes just because of certain dynamics, I guess, with the cast, and also because he just was so good. He just had so many like lines he came up with himself. To me, I gotta say the standout actor or performance to me was the character of Don Dawson, played by Sasha Jensen, who didn't really do much after the movie, which, you know, he didn't really act much after that. And I was totally stunned because he probably was my favorite character in the movie. He's in a ton of it and he's just like,
he's the asshole football player, right?
Yeah. But like he bullied Mitch, right? Like chased him down, paddling, all that, but then like has no issues hanging out with him. Like he doesn't look at him like, oh, we got your ass. Like, he doesn't do any of that. He's just like, want a beer? Like, he's psycho. He steals from a store. I mean, he's just like a wild dude and nothing really affects him. Like, he seems to fit into multiple groups. Now, granted, most groups are like, what a tool, but he's still kind of that guy that just, you know him to be that way, but you still hang out with him. So he was probably my favorite character in this movie. I do wish we had more Parker Posey, though. Like, yeah. Her scene at the beginning when she's just throwing mustard and ketchup on these girls.
So funny.
So funny. I mean, they're like, bitch. I mean, it's so funny how, like, intense she is. And even some of the language, I was like, wow, they were saying that in this movie. At one point, she goes, wipe that face off your head, bitch. And I literally paused the movie and was like, how can I incorporate that line more in my life? I don't know how I'm going to make that work, but it was so fucking funny to me. I wish there was more. I mean, the girls kind of took a back seat in this movie. Like, they were the ones being flirted with. They were the ones like, oh, what are you doing here? But, like, Parker Posey seemed so dominant, so, like, intense, that I just thought she would be more in the movie. Like, one of the characters would be trying to get with her, or she was already with, like, you know. So I was surprised that it really was at the beginning, because she was such a standout character to me.
I think it's tough when you have so many characters that you're incorporating into the movie and you're following a ton of different storylines. I mean, we talked Wooderson, who is electric. Slater, like, kind of the stereotypical pothead, was great every single time he was on the screen as well. Then you had the Ben Affleck O'Bannon character popping up here and there. Cole Hauser is in this as another football player, Benny. So it's just such a loaded cast, and everybody gave, like, something just a little bit differently, and they meshed really well together. But I do have a very important question to ask you, since I mentioned Slater, Kayla. What are your views on George Washington? Was he in a cult, and did he believe in aliens?
You know what? I was kind of on board with some of his conspiracy theories, because I feel like I've always been lied to about George Washington. Like, you're like, the wooden teeth, like, he's always honest. Like, have you heard, like, somehow George Washington, all these weird little things about him?
Yeah.
And then you find out some of them are true and some of them are not. So I do find it funny that he's so fixated on historical figures. But, I mean, that was great. That's what happens.
Well, Martha Washington is a hip, hip lady, man. So
she is. I always thought that. So I'm glad to have that validated.
I watched this movie and Do Revenge the same night. I may or may not have had a gummy, sat down and watched these movies. And straight up, it was a great night. Just sitting by myself, watching these movies, like, laughing my ass off at some of the nonsense that was going on. So, good times, Kayla.
Well, that's great. I'm glad. I'm glad you really embodied kind of the theme of these movies. The last thing I want to say about this film is the paddling was so fucking bizarre to me. I love that it was just accepted as not insane behavior, that these grown guys were just running around with paddles to smack their asses. I feel like the freshmen, like, there were no, like, cocky, bigger freshmen that were, like, making fun of the fact that they were obsessed with taking this wooden paddle to their ass. Like, I just feel like there were so many insults and jokes you could have made. I mean, sure, you maybe would have got a beat down, but I just find it so funny that they were, like, so obsessed with doing this as far as all the bullying tactics, you know what I mean?
I think it was just a different time, Kayla, and it was kind of like their frat style mentality of initiating these people that are coming to high school the next year. Obviously that doesn't fly nowadays, but I will say I was at I participated in a beer pong tournament in college with one of our good friends, Allie Brown, formerly Allie Smith, and we won that beer pong tournament in togas, and as the winners, we got to paddle the people that we beat in the finals. So it's still the thing. It was obviously nothing like this movie. It was more of like a playful, like, yada yada. But
you mean you didn't hit them with the force of Zeus himself, as it
and
seemed
like 20
like they
times
did?
Like, bam,
Ben
bam,
Affleck
bam.
Fucking couldn't stop. He wanted round 3, 5, and 10.
Somebody pulled the shotgun out on him, so happened, he was like, that's it, I'm gonna kill these kids with this paddle, which, yeah, pretty aggressive.
It was a bold move for them to put paint on him, knowing that he was a repeat senior, because what if he does it again in third year and they see him when they walk through the halls, you know? Yikes.
I think if he were to try to do something in the halls, at a certain point, Mitch may just have faith that Pink Floyd or these other guys he's been hanging out with would stick up for him and not let him be murdered by the crazy O'Bannon character.
There you go. Yeah, you're right. I think it added, obviously, to the hilarity of different scenes. I think overall, like, because 70s culture, one, I didn't experience it, and two, there wasn't much to it other than like a moment in time, right? This is literally a movie taking place in one day, one night. The theme of it wasn't really getting me. I enjoyed the character moments. That's really where like I got caught up. But like they're just kind of like hanging out, drinking beers out of a trunk, and I was like, okay, where are we going next? Shout out also to Anthony Rapp. I enjoyed his weird, quirky, long haired nerdiness of just trying to find the cool party to go to, but being so awkward.
Did we have you know, having the parties in the woods, that was a thing, 70s, 80s, I think 90s. You know, we may have like had group hangouts and stuff. I don't think it was quite full on keg parties. I know we've had some. I don't know, like straight woods, though. Usually it'd be kind of a house party by the time we were getting to that age. But did we have a spot to hang out like they did, this arcade emporium billiard spot? Nothing's really jumping out.
No, we didn't have a cool spot like that. No. It was like you were hanging out in some weird part of the school. You were at someone's house or the mall. Yeah, like you were Shop City. Like you weren't really.
Yeah, that was us walking around. Going for a walk
was big too, right? Like you'd go for a walk around the neighborhood, like with your crew, basically, like joking around. Yeah, it wasn't.
Yeah, no money, nothing to do. And it was, in this movie, it was like they were driving around to different spots. For us, it was we were walking around, or we'd go to the mall, walk around the mall, and hang out for a few hours. But yeah, that Emporium spot was pretty pretty sick. And they just let kids of all ages in, apparently.
That was, it doesn't really matter. Do you remember, did we have any, like, when we were going from 8th grade to 9th grade, do you remember any, like, stories or, like, people kind of trying to give you rumors about, like, what they do to freshmen? I do remember that.
My brain is shot for remembering specific details like that, Kayla. So what do you remember?
I remember, like, because our school, our middle school was, like, K through 8, and that's where we went. And then we went to, you know, the last four for high school at a different school. You would see a lot of, like, the older kids were in the school with you. And so I feel like because the schools were close together, like, you'd see the high schoolers walking by our you know, middle school all the time. Like I heard those rumors. Like I remember being like, oh, they do this and this to you when you're a freshman, like you gotta like get out at this. Like I remember there being rumors about that. I feel like I was concerned about it. Now granted, I could have just had the wrong person that was fucking around and messing with me, but I remember that, like, oh shit, the seniors like do stuff to eighth graders. But I think for us it was like we like to scare the freshmen coming in, so we all just say that we do different stuff, but I don't remember anything actually being done. Like, they would take your shoes. I remember, like, that was something, too. Like, they take your shoes.
Yeah, I remember the anxiety of being like, oh, are the seniors going to do anything? I don't remember any, like, specific things happening. I played sports, so there'd be, like, a little, like, hazing and stuff in sports, but nothing anywhere close to what they were doing in this movie.
And thank God, because I don't know what the fuck I would have done if someone just comes around a pickup truck with a paddle, other than laugh. I mean, absolutely absurd. All right, that's my thoughts for Dazed and Confused. Shall we get to your film, Do Revenge?
All right, Do Revenge, Kayla, available on Netflix. So thank you for, we've been a few in a row here where I haven't had to pay to watch the movie that you've given me. So props. directed by Jennifer Caton Robinson. She also directed an episode of Love Life, which is a good show on Max that I'm a fan of. I haven't seen a new season come out in a while. It was written by her as well as Celeste Ballard. The budget was $25 million. It's a Netflix movie, so we don't really have any type of values on how much money it brings in. Runtime is just under 2 hours, so 1 hour, 58 minutes. Both movies, Kayla, under 2 hours. It was just a different time. And Rotten Tomatoes score of 84 for this film. So very good for this type of kind of high school comedy type of film. Usually those are rated pretty low by the critics. So I have a couple fun facts on this. So, obviously, as a high school film, it pays a lot of, like, homage to a lot of previous films. And a few things that they noted throughout the movie here is they had a sign in the background that references a main character from Clueless. They have a Taylor Swift lyric. I don't know if you caught that when you were watching it, where at one point she goes, she can't come to the phone right now because she's dead. And I immediately was like, oh, that's my girl T Swift right there. So props to that. And then there were a lot of nods to Cruel Intentions, which is one of my favorite movies, Kayla. And out of nowhere, Sarah Michelle Gellar is in there playing the headmaster. And apparently when she signed on for the movie, they rewrote a lot of her lines to make her sound more like her character from Cruel Intentions, Catherine, because they were trying to kind of not make it like it's Catherine older, but try to give you that feel and that reference to the older shows. And then they play Praise by Fatboy Slim at the end, which is also a key song that's played throughout Cruel Intentions. So a couple little fun facts there, Kayla.
Could you imagine adult Catherine being like the headmaster at a private school, just doing coke under her drawer? I mean, so
that would be
funny
insane
to think about now.
Great movie idea, Kayla. Or actually TV show. We could go seasons with that.
Oh my God. That's hilarious to me. Thank you for that fun fact, because that made me look at the movie a different way.
And for those of you who have not seen it, the quick one sentence plot is, you have two people from different backgrounds become friends and agree to go after each other's bullies. So they kind of meet outside of school. The one girl is transferring in, and they're like, I'll go after your bully, you go after mine, so that we're both innocent for our respective, and they'll never know we're working together. So just a great premise right off the bat, Kayla, for a good movie. Do you want to count me down to my quick rundown here, Kayla?
I certainly do. Okay, here we go. 3, 2, 1.
Middle class girl Dre at fancy prep school. Rich kids throw her a party at the end of the school year. She calls out a girl that was talking shit, sends provocative video to her boyfriend Max. Max is a shitbag and sends it to everybody, but denies that he's kind of the king of the school, so gets away with everything anyway. Dre gets in trouble for punching Max in the face. Dre works at a tennis cap, frames Sophie Turner's character for cocaine, meets tomboy Eleanor, claims she was screwed over by someone too, Carissa. They hatch plan to go after each other's bullies. Dre contaminates big dinner with mushrooms from Carissa's secret greenhouse and tips off school administrators. Eleanor and Dre become good friends. Max somehow avoids issues when they leak his skeevy text to a ton of girls on campus. Dre is pissed and starts being an ass. Curveball, Eleanor was playing Drea the whole time because Drea bullied her years ago, calling her nosy Nora. Drea refuses to keep following Eleanor's plan. She hits the fan. Max stupidly admits to everything, and Eleanor catches it on her secret camera. Drea gets into Yale happily ever after, the end.
45 seconds. Nice.
So yeah, this is good, fun movie, Kayla. Main takeaway is it's basically Mean Girls with a twist, right? That's we're going to infiltrate this group in order to get dirt, in order to screw over this group of people. And the twist is that she was, Eleanor, the main character, was in it the whole time trying to screw over Drea. So I really enjoyed it. I thought it was very well done, especially for kind of a Netflix teen rom-commy type of movie. But good recommendation, Kayla.
All right, solid. Did the Eleanor twist get you, or were you suspicious of her before then?
So I was suspicious when I first met Eleanor, and I was like, All right, this is going to come back around. But then they waited so long to reveal it in the movie, I completely forgot. So when it happened, I was like, oh, shit, this is great. So I was very glad for the twist, and it wasn't just kind of the templated one. It did have a couple of these kind of key switch ups that kept me entertained throughout the film.
When I went to go see this movie, I saw it's the Maya Hawke of it all that got me, because I discovered in Stranger Things, like many people, she's the daughter of Ethan Hawke and Uma Thurman. I mean, amazing genes, truly. So I was like, all right, I think I'm kind of interested. I knew Camila Mendes from the Riverdale, but I didn't watch that show. So I was like, I'm intrigued. What did you think about their performance, I guess? They're the main characters in this. What'd you think?
I thought they were pretty good. I really like Maya Hawke. Like you said, she's kind of known for Stranger Things. Also is in Maestro, which is a new movie coming out this year, and was in Asteroid City. I think she kind of stole the screen every time she was on camera. Camila Mendes, who played Drea, I think was solid, but not, there were some points where you're like, all right, come on here. We can step it up a little bit here. But I think that's going to happen when you're doing these teen movies, right? I will say the boyfriend, Max, played by, Austin Abrams, is just a prototypical, I want to punch that kid in the face. He just gives you that vibe and perfect casting. He's in Euphoria. He's in, I don't know if you watch the show This Is Us, but he plays a ship boyfriend in This Is Us to one of the daughters there. So just a great, great pull to bring him in, because as soon as you see him, you're like, this guy's a rich, entitled asshole, and I want to punch him in his face.
Yeah, absolutely. I second that. What I really enjoyed about this movie is the writing, to be honest, because they are so fucking quippy and witty, and some of these lines are so fucking funny. All I want is a revenge mommy, is all I'm going to say. Anytime Maya Hawke said that, I literally was like, this is so funny. Yes, revenge mommy.
And it wasn't corny writing where they're not in on the joke. They were writing in on the joke the whole time. Like, it was intentional, which what makes it good. I mean, they reveal all of Max's text messages. He's basically trying to hook up with all the girls in the school and get, you know, provocative photos from them. And nobody's doing anything about it. And he sets up the cis hetero men championing female identifying students league in order to be like, I care about women. Look at all this stuff I'm doing. I started this hetero men championing female students league, where it's just like all this fake feminist gestures and allies and stuff. Like, that was just really well done. Like, this is the type of person that would try to do that to get the heat off of himself, you know?
Yes, definitely. This movie just has so many side characters too that are so freaking funny. Particularly Sophia Turner, as you said, playing Erica, who she double crosses and makes her go to rehab. Just any scene she's in is so over the top funny. My particular favorite is when she's like saying she visits her to get the scoop on Eleanor, when she's kind of realized that Eleanor isn't who she said she is. And so we turn her character, like, brings her in and is like, I'm here to do my step, right? My 12 steps. And she's like, I want nothing but the worst for you. Drea just like, okay. And then later on, when she's talking to Carissa to get the information, you see Sophie Turner's painting in like an art class, but it's painting Drea in like flames, and she's just glaring at her. It's just so many like little moments that are so funny to me. Yeah, and you have Alicia Beau from 13 Reasons Why. She was really good as like the ex-friend.
Tara, yeah, she played a great character. She was really good in 13 Reasons Why too. Hopefully she gets a lot more roles going here, because
She's got that phase too where she can like keep being in kind of high school centered movies, so
true,
you know, sometimes that's how it goes. A big component of what I really enjoyed about this movie is that I just felt like the chemistry between Camille and Maya was so good. It was so believable as these like totally strangers to friends, and how they complemented each other. Like, Maya Hawke's playing kind of like the shyer introverted one, where she's like, yeah, I want revenge, but like, you know, she has to get in with the cool crowd, right? And Drea's just this mastermind. Every time, there's one time where Maya Hawke's character Eleanor is like going through the library, and then Drea just pops up her face, and like Eleanor like stumbles back. It's so like, and they're also like totally platonic friends, and I love that, especially when you have Maya Hawke's character being gay. There's no like weirdness about how sexual they can be sometimes, but like in joke and make fun and stuff, and you're never like, oh, is this crossing a line? Like, they're just absolutely take each other as there is. There's no, and I love that dynamic, because you don't see it a lot in movies at all.
Completely agree. I was worried when she was first introduced, they were going to turn this into, are they going to have some type of romantic thing? I love that they kept it solely as friends. I think you even have a line somewhere in the movie where Eleanor goes, everybody's fucking gay. What are you talking about? Or everybody's a little gay, or something along those lines, which was just hilarious, especially in the context. And you kind of have this, it turns kind of sad at a point, right? Because Eleanor thinks she has actually developed this friendship with Drea after all these years, and she is now feeling kind of included in these groups. And it's the scenario of like, when does like the pretend turn to permanent, right? She's faking this, she's putting this facade on, but after a certain point, when is that just not who you have become? And as she becomes more and more the person she's pretending to be, she's getting farther and farther away from Drea, who is basically turning into a lunatic trying to seek out revenge. So I do like the dynamic they had there, where she's just like, all right, you're clearly not my friend, so I'm going to fuck you over too. Deal with it, girl. You know?
Yes. You said it perfectly, because that's basically where Eleanor gets. She's stuck in this, I actually wanted to do revenge on you this whole time, but we've actually become friends. I'm feeling bad for what I'm doing. And then there's this girl that she's interested in who literally was like, you're totally a different person. She's lost it. Like, you've become this person. There's no separation between the persona you're trying to be to get revenge and who you are. I mean, I love when Drea too is sleeping with the guy and he's crawling down her body to give oral, but she's so preoccupied with revenge that she's just like trying to get info on a party on her phone, and so she's faking it. She's like, oh yeah, uh-huh, so good. I was like, this movie's so funny because she's so, her hyperfixation on revenge and like completely like just shutting anyone out and not caring what they say is so funny.
And she even had, like, because she's got to get the other romantic interest, which in this case was Russ, who's, like, the rebel, motorcycle, blue hair, just happens to be best friends with the person she's already framed for putting mushrooms in the meal, right? And they have the scene where she goes to his, like, art studio, because rich folks again. And they have, like, the throw paint at each other scenes, similar to, like, the 10 Things I Hate About You, and it's just having all these kind of side scenes outside of the main plot line is really what brings this whole movie home. I did have one kind of issue with it. Are you going to continue to be friends with Eleanor after she hits you with her fucking car and puts you in the hospital and nobody figured out it was her? There's not a police report written. Like, what the hell?
Listen, I think it's said perfectly when Drea is apologizing to Eleanor about how she acted, about how she basically kind of tossed her to the side for revenge. And it was very sincere and like a good moment. And Eleanor, of course, has turned into a total monster once it's revealed. When she shows up at her house and she's making her grilled cheese and like revealing her, like, you know, it's like the villain monologue. It just is so funny to me. Like, you know, that kind of personality change, because she takes this, like, I'm in charge now attitude, which, you know, is false. Like, it reads as like, I'm putting on this persona, even though it's acting. But what does Eleanor say? Like, do you forgive me? Right. When they like console each other and forgive each other. And Drea goes, I guess so. I think we're fucked up soulmates. They're both so fucked up in different ways. Yeah. They complement each other. And that's why I think like Drea isn't like, you put me in a hospital for overnight. She's like, yeah, that's something I would do if I had thought of it. Like, I think that's how Drea thinks of it. So funny.
And like, when you get to the end of the movie and you realize like Drea has kind of been the bully all along, and the point is Eleanor is kind of bullying the bully, right? And you look back at like the opening scene where somebody's talking shit about her. So it's like, oh, is she being bullied? And then she calls out the one girl at the party and goes, oh, she's going to donate her entire wardrobe to the cause. Like, basically just forcing her to do it and sign one that she's a mean ass bully. And the way they kind of frame it is she is kind of this middle class or lower middle class and got a scholarship to attend the school. So people look down on her a little bit for that. And also she needs to be on her quote unquote top behavior so that she can maintain her scholarship. There's always got to be this little extra twist in there. Like, we're going to kick you out if you don't maintain your grades, but this shitbag over here, his dad is worth $2 billion. So he can stay. No big deal. So they always have to kind of throw that in. And the, I need to get into Yale. That's all I've ever wanted. Oh, is Brown not good enough? Wait, you can't go to Stanford? Like, what? It needs to be Yale? Come on, girl.
It's so great. Just the dynamic, and like you said, how they're playing off with the colleges. Like, it's so important to get to it. And that's kind of how Eleanor brings her down, is trying to get her to lose her Yale opportunities. They're just both so devious and fucked up in different ways that when they come together, you're like, yeah, somehow you guys are best friends. Like, absolutely. Like, you're both fucked up. And I concur with that. I just thought it was a fun, laughable movie. Did you watch this before Dazed and Confused, or did you watch Dazed and Confused first?
Dazed and Confused first.
Okay, all right. So you really hit the sweet spot when you started watching Do Revenge.
Yes, exactly. So it was pretty funny, I will say. It may have been it may have seemed funnier to me than if I were to watch that on another day or another time, but all in all, it was a good double feature that I watched at home by myself.
All right, that's great. So if you want a movie pairing, we'll say Dazed and Confused and Your Revenge is a treat. All right, shall we rate these films? What is your VHS rating for Due Revenge?
For Due Revenge, I am going to give it 3.5 out of 5 VHS tapes, Kayla.
Okay. I gave it 4, I believe. I did rewatch it too, when, you know, we gave each other these films, and I found it just as delightful, like even in the year or so it was since I last saw it. All right, Dazed and Confused. Again, nothing to this movie. I appreciate the cult classicness of it. But you know, The Room's a cult classic, and that doesn't mean it was a good movie. I'm gonna give Dazed and Confused 2.5 VHS tapes.
Just an abysmal rating by you, Kayla.
I probably won't rewatch it, but I appreciate watching it.
Like such a rewatchable movie.
I love that you're saying that. You too watched it for the first time this week, but you're already like, it's a rewatchable movie.
It's all,
that you haven't rewatched yet.
It's immediately a rewatchable movie.
You actually haven't tested this?
Been busy, Kayla. I give it, I was between 4 and 4.5. I'm going to go 4 VHS tapes.
Okay.
I think that's it's another situation where if I would have watched this 10 years ago, it probably would have been a 5 right off the bat. But now that I'm older, like, I think 4 seems pretty fair. And the more I rewatch it, maybe that increases up when I pick up on all of the other little things I missed out on.
Okay, all right. I look forward to this. All right. Final thoughts. High school, fun while we had it. Appreciate not being back there. Let's go ahead and have you pick for our next movie theme.
Shaking it up, little ASMR for the audience there.
I'm nervous. We've had some good picks lately, so let's see where we get.
We have
silent movies.
Rescue theme, Kayla.
Rescue. So, I'm gonna give you The Rescuers, the movie that you shaded me.
Rescuers
on.
Down Under.
No, I'm gonna give you the other one. What you didn't appreciate.
So rescue. So I guess
rescue movies.
So somebody just needs to be rescued from a situation, or it's got
to
be the main,
like, the movie has to be about rescuing. I think like the plot has to be about that. Yeah,
I think that's pretty broad. We can come up with a lot of stuff on that one, Kayla.
For sure, I'm excited. Rescue. Wow. As we get lower and lower in our picks, I'm always interested in what we manage to think of and have left of. All right, shall we get to our Swirly of the Week?
All right, Kayla, my Swirly of the Week this week is, it's going to be streamers, specifically Disney. So Disney is buying out Comcast for about $8.61 billion to take over the remainder of Hulu. And the reason they are doing this is because they are trying to consolidate into a single platform. So they're going to have an app that merges Disney, ESPN, Hulu all into one by March 2024. So basically, streaming is realizing they need to be more like cable in order to stay the course. And we're just going to be right back where we were, but twice as expensive as 10 years ago, Kayla.
You know, streamers have been our swirly, I feel like, pretty consistently throughout this past year. And I think that's just because, I mean, hello, right now the price hikes across all streaming services is getting so ridiculous. I literally met with you and was like, we need to see what we can share, because this is, again, becoming a cable bill on top of a cable bill. But yeah, I don't think it's for the better. Do you think we're eventually going to just have a bundled cable with all these streaming sites? Like,
so
will they all?
I was going to say, why is there not, and I'm sure it's an obvious answer because these are all different entities and they only want to be responsible for their own stuff, which is why we have like Discovery and HBO merged and they kind of have their own thing. Paramount with Showtime is merged. So I think like we could end up just having basically a cable version of streaming where there's one overarching umbrella, like just Verizon, say. And if you subscribe to this, you get the Hulu/Disney package, the HBO/Discovery package, the Showtime/Paramount package. And then it's going to turn into cable, but be more expensive. I think it is going to that route where they are going to have to consolidate and make this easier, because people are dropping subscriptions like crazy, I feel, especially with these costs getting ratcheted up.
I agree. I mean, I feel like I'm close to that. Like, I'm starting to go, what do I really watch on this station? And what they always get you on is that there's always one show or, like, one particular thing that you're like, fuck, it would suck if I didn't have, you know, this on, I'd have to redo it. And that's how they get you. You also forget what you're subscribed to. So they really count on you to forget that you need to check out on it. Yeah.
Yeah. Damn. And you could tell, like, Amazon and Apple, at least, are trying to turn their platforms into more of a, like, one-stop shop, right? So you can, like, purchase quote-unquote channels through Amazon and Apple for other streaming services. So I know through my Amazon is how I get my HBO and some other things, right? So that is kind of the way they're trying to cable-fy streaming now. I just don't know if it's going to be able to take that next step, or if it's going to turn into you need an Apple and you need an Amazon and you can watch both of those, and then the tech giants just get bigger and bigger, Kayla.
Aren't we in the best period ever, especially as we go into a time period of no TV in the next year? I love it for us. One teardrop goes down. Okay, yikes. All right, I'm getting depressed now on streaming services. Shall we get to my swirly? My swirly is the Mean Girls trailer. The Mean Girls movie's coming out. It stars the great, the fabulous Renee Rapp, who I'm absolutely obsessed with. You would know her, Justin, from The Sex Lives of College Girls. She plays my girl, the blonde, in the show.
Ah, yes, yes. I heard she was going to be in this.
She's a phenomenal singer. She actually is leaving The Sex Lives of College Girls to kind of embark on her music career, which is going really well. She has a great album out. Snow Angel, I believe it's called. But she started her roots in Broadway. So she was on the Mean Girls Broadway show. So she's in this film. The trailer doesn't have any of the music showing that this is a musical version and not a remake of Mean Girls, which to me is absolutely absurd. Now, I think what they're trying to do is get people interested who aren't musical fans. Like, I think they're not trying to, like, scare you with the song and dance of it. They're like, if you like Mean Girls, you'll like this. But if I didn't know that this was the musical show, I absolutely would be like, they redid Mean Girls from this trailer. I mean, truly not a song out there. So I just found that so bizarre in the trailer not to show anything. I mean, I've heard of, like, hiding all the music, so you're surprised, but none, Justin? Will you see this movie with me?
That seems like a bold strategy. I'll have no problem seeing this with you, Kayla. I'm not a big musical person. I do love Mean Girls, though. It's just one of those genres, like we just did an entire podcast on, that I could keep going back to. But I even Googled it quick, and I was like, oh, is it the musical that she's talking about? Because the trailer literally just says Mean Girls trailer. It doesn't say Mean Girls the musical or anything like that. So weird strategy, I guess.
Weird strategy. You even have Tina Fey in there, just like in the movie. And so it's just so, so bizarre to me. I think a lot of people are going to go into the movie wondering why they're singing in it when Renee Rapp's character comes in. All right. Shall we get to our friendship question of the week?
Kayla, did you finish Big Brother? The finale was last night. We're recording this on Friday, November 10th, folks.
Yes, I did. I'm happy. It was the only outcome that I guess I was rooting for. So Jag, of course. So,
well, my friendship question of the week was going to be Big Brother finale related for you. With the two characters, the two contestants we had at the end, which were Jag and Matt, which gameplay do you appreciate more as a fan? Jag clearly was manipulating and strategizing and won a ton of comps, but Matt had such...
Sort of Matt.
Yeah, he had such a social game and won some comps, about half as many as Jag. What if you were voting in the jury there, which holds like a bigger weight to you?
Huh, that's a good question. As you know, across all our competition reality shows, I don't really count like the wins, the like competition wins as my factor of like a good player. I appreciated Jag's game from like the get-go. Like he was one of the ones that when we met him, I was like, oh, okay, this guy seems cool. I like it when they get dirty with each other. I like it when they betray. And I think Matt did that too, but he came across nicer, you know, when he was doing stuff. But he didn't really fall for it.
He didn't really own up to a lot of his moves. Yeah. And I think in the final kind of question section before they chose the winner, he just completely dropped the ball. Like, they kept asking him to, like, outline things he did, and he just would be like, well, I saved Jag on week four, which you should have hammered that home even a little bit more, because Jag's gone if you don't save him. And then Jag brought you to final two, thinking that he was probably going to lose to you. So I think he should have been a little bit more prepared on that front, because Jag clearly had a strategy in place of, I screwed over all of these people. They know I did it. I'm going to lean into it and just claim all of these moves as my own. And Matt was much more like, oh, well, we were working together and I didn't mean to. And Jag's like, no, I meant to. I needed to in order to win. And I did not think that strategy was going to work, but he got the vote. So, you know, props to Jag.
Listen, I think, like, people take it personally, right? When you betray them, you help get them out, whatever. But I think, like, most everyone who starts the first day, they're all like, I'm a huge super fan. I love Big Brother. I've been watching for X amount of years. So I feel like most of the time they all appreciate, like, a well-played game versus, like, you got me out. You know what I mean? I think that's separate from other reality shows. Like, I feel like Survivor, I feel like a lot of times they take that shit personally. Mm-hmm. And you're surviving out with each other, so I get it. But I just feel like Big Brother more appreciates, like, how someone got to the end than in other competition shows.
Yeah, and I think, I mean, they had a great alliance, the Minutemen alliance with Jag and Matt, and then they brought in Bowie for the Mafia, which was kind of late in the season. But I do take some, I think, more stock in the physical competitions than you do, like, in deciding a winner. And with kind of a caveat of if it's competitions that they needed to win. Like, at a certain point, Jag needed to win or he was going up on the block, and him and Matt kept winning. Like, if you're just winning, it's like, all right, whatever, and you're not making any big moves, you're not doing anything special, that doesn't do anything for me. But all of his were very strategic. And I posted on our Instagram the other day how great it was that Cerise statement when she was in the jury house of, well, I'd be a little bit more impressed if he wasn't playing two seniors, an airhead, and an idiot in these competitions. And I was like, Cerise just doesn't give a shit, man. I started rooting for her more and more, Kayla. I just wish she would have won a comp or two.
I know, but she just never was going to do that. She was a focal point for my interest this season. I appreciate it. It's kind of like I got really into the Celebrity Big Brother because, one, it wasn't on that often in a week, and it was also, like, only a couple weeks. However, that was the most fucked up season of Big Brother, so much so that they haven't done it again. They have not had a celebrity season since, because so much crazy shit happened on that season. And so I appreciated, like, knowing someone going in, and especially someone like Suri Fields, who is, you know, Survivor royalty. So great. And on Crown Queen, if you will.
Indeed. And you could tell she was ready to bitch at her son a couple of times too. She's like, I'm going to have to talk to you about your gameplay after this. Like, because she understands that Jared's one of the worst players in the history of reality television. So,
yeah, as only a mother can. All right. I think that wraps it up for us this week. And as always, we'll see you next week.
Well, that's it for this episode of Wrong Opinions Only. Please follow us on Instagram at Wrong Opinions Only and on Twitter at Wrong Opinions JK, where we'll be dropping some clues and hints to upcoming episodes. Until then, JK out.